I'm ICIS Chemical Business Deputy Editor Will Beecham, and I'm here with Paul Hodges, Chairman of International Echem. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Will.
Paul, it's great to have you back with us again, kind of a week or two into the crisis since we last spoke. And it looks like, well, the oil price is still going down, markets are still collapsing more or less, and this is despite these sort of major interventions by central banks and discussions about government fiscal measures as well. What's your analysis of why the markets are still continuing to collapse at the moment?
Well, I think if we take the two areas separately, we take the oil markets, what we're seeing is, and this was forecasted before the coronavirus crisis started, is a vast surplus of oil in the market because of the new production in the States that continues to grow. Russia never cut back at all under the OPEC Plus agreement and actually produced 300,000 barrels a day more last year. Saudi did cut back. There were some other interruptions, obviously Venezuela, Libya, etc. But when you add in the effect of Wuhan and Hubei and the massive drop in oil demand as a result of that, you've clearly got a vast surplus. And so the cartel can't cope with that. And the prices are falling. We got the timing more or less right. I mean, within a couple of days of suggesting that prices were going to go from 50 to 30, they started on that process. And I don't see any particular reason why they should stop until we get somewhere near $10. Probably at that point, it will slow down. How long it will take? The markets are very, very volatile. They go in a burst, two steps forward, as it were, two steps down, one step back. One's got to get used to this 10% in a day volatility. On the other question,
just on that, I just on that. How likely is it that, say, that Saudi might decide to end this price war over oil?
Well, I mean, the only way that you can end the price war is by deciding that you're going to have really major cutbacks in supply. And that, of course, is self-defeating because you might get a higher price, but you sell less. You know, cartels don't in the end work. And Yamani said this when he was an oil, he was Saudi oil minister. We saw it again in 2014. You can hold the price up for a short period, but overall, all you do is you encourage new production, the shale oil production. And, you know, so it's not a sensible way of going forward. And anyway, everybody knows that oil demand in 10, 15 years time is going to be very much less than it is today for all sorts of reasons, not just climate change and air quality and so on. So, you know, the countries need to diversify away from oil. Trying to hold on to high oil prices is only trying to postpone the evil day and doesn't do you any good. But then if you look at the other side of the question around the economy, well, we've seen central banks do what they always do, which is to look after their friends in the financial markets. Well, it doesn't work. We're seeing the airline industry going bankrupt. Why is the airline industry going bankrupt? Because the bosses of the airline industry used 96% of their free cash flow, according to Bloomberg, which is a pretty reliable source, in order for buybacks, in order to push up the share price, in order to boost the CEO and the other people's bonuses. And now they've gone bankrupt because they had no spare cash reserves. Well, you know, that's the problem that the central banks have created. They've pushed up asset values. They've encouraged a set of people into the C-suite who don't care about the industries they're working in. They just want to maximize their own income. And we are seeing, unfortunately, the result. I mean, you know, we saw this massive 1% cut by the Fed on Sunday, and markets, how did markets recover? They had one of their biggest ever losses. And that's a sign that central banks are losing their control of the market, just as OPEC has lost its control of the oil market. And we're going back to the real function of markets, which is price discovery. I want to buy something, you want to sell it, and we negotiate over the price and what is affordable for me and what is reasonable for you, not something that's popped up by a central banker.
So in terms of recession, you've been talking about recession for some time. Do you think we're already in one, and what kind of how bad and prolonged do you think it could be?
I think we published our special report on the coming debt crisis in August, when China first began to show signs of its economy seizing up. And to us, that was very much like when I wrote in the blog in March 2008 about Bear Stearns. There's a point in these things where you're warning people and saying, look, this could happen, please, you know, pay attention and so on. And then there's a moment beyond that, that's it, it's done. And, you know, although the price of oil carried on going up after March 2008, you know, reached $146, as we know, the die was cast. It just, you know, something was going to happen. It turned out that something was Lehman. This time round, exactly the same. The oil price went up and so on and so forth. But, you know, something this time, it's coronavirus. That's the catalyst for it. But if we had a properly functioning economy with properly functioning firms, this wouldn't be knocking us to six in the way that it is. It's because the economy is fundamentally weak that and unstable because of all the debt that we're going through this. And I think it will take years, because I can't at the moment see how we get back to any kind of normality in this, because governments are still doing the wrong things.
So if you're talking about years, this is more like an L-shaped kind of...
Yeah.
We can't really talk about recovery, can we?
No, exactly.
And the impact on chemicals for 2020, it looks like demand is collapsing now beyond China. We can see it happening in Europe already. There was lots of announcements yesterday of automotive plants shutting all over the place. How do you see things panning out for the chemical sector?
Well, as I've said in the analysis that you're kindly publishing later this week, I think there are five areas that we need to focus on. The first one is obviously employee health and safety. That has to be the top priority. Then we look at value chain risks. As you said, you know, the oil price collapse means, for example, that the wishful thinking around US shale expansions is being exposed as wishful thinking. You know, the median oil price has always been $24 a barrel, and it looks like, you know, that's going to continue to be the median oil price. So a lot of risk upstream, which people are already identifying there. Downstream, as you say, the automotive market, very bad state. A, people aren't going to be buying cars, and B, they won't be able to because they won't have the parts, because they won't have come from China. Electronics, the same. We don't, you know, Foxconn had to say a month ago they weren't able to produce the parts for Apple's new iPhone and so on. All of these disruptions are going to take place. Then we look at supply chains, and you know, people imagine that you can have massive disruption, as we've seen in China over 2 months, and everything's back to normal. I mean, if you even think about a train service, if you have a couple of days of strikes or bad weather or something, all the trains are in the wrong place, all the drivers are in the wrong place, and so on. I mean, ships haven't been calling in China because they've been worried about quarantine for the crew, and there hasn't been any demand anyway. So the ships are all in the wrong place, containers are all in the wrong place, everything's in the wrong place, and it will take weeks, if not months, to start putting all this back together. So if you want to order something from China today, you'll be lucky to get it in the third quarter. So, you know, so people have got to check on supply chains and so on. Credit risks. A lot of companies inevitably going to go bankrupt. How many businesses have enough cash, small businesses particularly, to survive 2 or 3 months of having no orders and having to pay the staff and so on? Equally, of course, if you're closing down bars, you're closing down restaurants, you're closing down all these, most of these people in the leisure and hospitality industries are on minimum wage. They don't have any savings. I mean, in the UK, the 60 million population, 10 million people have no savings. You're throwing them out of work, so they won't be buying very much. So, you know, you've got major credit risks going on here. And then, of course, We aren't going to be going back in the word to normal at the end of all of this, because we are seeing paradigm shifts going on. We're seeing the move away from globalization that we talked about before. We're seeing much more towards sustainability. We're not going to be seeing lots of new internal combustion engine cars with all their varied demand for chemicals anymore. We're going to be seeing electric vehicles and so on. So there's a wide variety of changes. So there are risks and there are opportunities. And frankly, what worries me is that people are still believing that somehow the central banks can wave a magic wand and we don't have to worry about contingency planning. I feel this will end very badly if people continue with this idea that the central banks can solve the problem, because they clearly can't. They're more of an obstacle than an actual help.
And in terms of the direct impact on chemical companies, how bad could it get? Could you foresee bankruptcies of chemical companies, perhaps which are over leveraged, cancellation of projects, or?
Well, I mean, the first stage is to get, you know, people have got to get ahead of the game. You know, the businesses that I run, you know, we're looking at, you know, cutting wages, because clearly you have to do that. It's much better for people to have a job than no job at all. You know, what is a realistic level of sales that you can expect to have, and then maybe half that as a downside case. If that happened, what would it be like? And you've got to be very thoughtful about what are the risks here. So you might want to believe, I would want to believe, that by the summer this might be over. Okay, fine, so that's 3-4 months away, and then it will be the summer itself. So what would you do if your business had gone down by 10%, 30%, 50% or something over that period? Now, second contingency plan, what about if this continued to the end of the year? Because it might. Now, you might say, oh, that's impossible, so the government would do something. Sorry, what could government do here? The important thing, I'm afraid some of us are, a bit older than others. We remember these situations in the 1970s and the 1980s. And we remember that what you did was to take a very clear view of what the worst case might be, and then work around that. Because if it turns out better, that's great. No. But if you take an optimistic view, then you will leave yourself with very few options in 2 or 3 months if you're disappointed.
Paul, thank you very much for your views. It's great.
I'm sorry to be depressing. I think it is a very depressing and frightening time, and my heart goes out to everyone.
Thank you, Paul.